Justice Hankinson is taking no part in the deliberation or decision of this case. Court is ready to hear argument for petitioner in Fort Worth ISD versus City of Fort Worth.
May it please the court, this is Terry Oxford will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I would like to begin with three primary reasons why this court can, and we respectfully submit, should reverse the summary judgment entered below. The first reason is that judicial precedent clearly establishes that the city does not enjoy any sort of immunity on the facts of this case. Second, the concerns that this court discussed in the federal fine opinions and the various opinions in that case strongly favor the independent school district's position here. And third, the record flatly contradicts and at a minimum raises a fact issue with respect to the Court of Appeal's central finding that there was no contract here. With the court's permission, I'd like to begin on this last point. We've cited much evidence to this effect, which is in the ordinances and resolutions themselves. I think one of the strongest pieces of evidence that there was, in fact, an agreement exists in the record at page 714, which is a memo from Wade Adkins, city attorney of the city of Fort Worth itself, in 1986, which said as follows. It described the 1936 litigation and opinion, and then says, following that Court of Appeals decision, the city, the independent school district, and Bell settled the suit. And I'm quoting now, the settlement agreement, specifically mentions an agreement, and by the way, let me pause there, Your Honors. It is Hornbook law that a settlement and a settlement agreement is indeed a contract. The settlement agreement was accomplished through the following actions. A, the City Council adopted Ordinance Number 1933 and Ordinance Number 1935. B, the Board of Education, that's us, adopted a resolution on December 31, 1936. And C, the Board of Directors of Southwestern Bell adopted resolutions accepting both the city ordinance and the Board of Education resolution. That statement by the Fort Worth City Attorney in 1986, looking back on the facts of this case, is exactly the position that we, the independent school district, have maintained about what that contract was. It was a settlement agreement, and what evidence that contract.
What exactly was settled? What dispute was there in the earlier case between the independent school district and the city that was specifically settled? Was there a cross-action? Were there claims going back and forth?
There was not a cross-action between the independent school district and the city of Fort Worth. In that litigation, we were sitting at different tables. We were sitting with the city of Fort Worth. What happened was, and I believe it was 1927, both the city of Fort Worth and the independent school district issued assessments on an easement, what we claimed was an easement, that Southwestern Bell had to operate within the city limits of Fort Worth. Bell didn't like that, and Bell immediately brought a suit for an injunction and indeed received an injunction from the federal district court preventing.
Now, I understand the history, but you agree there was no pending dispute between the school district and the city to be settled. There was just a dispute with Southwestern Bell.
That's right, but Your Honor, the school district's consent to that settlement was absolutely a condition to the city's receiving its consideration under that settlement.
And is there summary judgment proof to that effect?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. There absolutely is.
Okay.
For example, at the record at page 575, there's a 1959 memo from the city attorney at that time.
Well, that's after the fact, right?
Yes, but you're asking, was there evidence? Well, let me just get that one out, and then I'll get back to the fact, because there's evidence at the time as well. But he says, that is the city, could not make the settlement with the telephone company unless it was agreeable to the school district. That's looking back on it. Now,
why is that?
Well, Your Honor, the way I look at it is it's like a multi-part where you have several plaintiffs in a lawsuit. Sometimes the defendant is not going to settle with one of them. This was a very important situation with Southwestern Bell. The school district, as well as the city, were making a claim that, as far as I know, had never been made before. That is that the right of Southwestern Bell to operate in the alleys and byways of the city was an taxable, accessible property right. Southwestern Bell does not like that contention, and had Southwestern Bell just settled with the city and left the school district out there, at the time, the school district had the perfect right to levy those taxes. Now, I'll get another issue in this case is the fact that the assessor collector for us at the time was the city. But we had the right to make that claim. Had Bell just settled with the city, we would still be making that claim.
But we have to infer that.
You don't have to infer it.
I mean, is there anything that we can point to that says what you just said?
Yes, it's in the Fifth Circuit opinion, for example. And the... it's in the briefs as well as the city charter.
Well, I mean, I know what the allegations were. I guess what I'm getting at, is there anything to indicate that the independent school district claims were all settled and other than the ordinances themselves and the resolutions you're talking about? I mean, anything to indicate that their piece was a part of this settlement other than the inference drawn from the ordinance?
That the piece from the school district was a part of the settlement? Yes. It specifically says in our resolution, for example, which is a part of the settlement on page 1 of the resolution.
Well, again, my question was separate apart from the ordinances and the resolutions.
Well, no, the agreement itself says it's subject to. I mean, it does say in the resolution that this settlement is subject to our approval.
That's the school district's resolution.
Yes.
That's nothing in the city records indicate. It seems to me your great difficulty here is you have a series of documents, none of which refers to any other series of documents that would enable a court to determine that these were all part of a common contract. What do you have that ties the city ordinance 1935 and 33 to Southwestern Bell's acceptance of a Fort Worth resolution or Fort Worth School Board's resolution that ties those ordinances to Southwestern Bell's agreement? I mean,
with all due respect, we do have something. We have quite a few pieces of evidence in the record that I think is really undisputable. That ordinance 1935 itself, Your Honor, says, whereas in the settlement, it refers to the settlement, not a multi-party settlement, the settlement of the controversy existing between Southwestern Bell Telephone, the city, and Fort Worth Independent School District. It is provided in ordinance number 1933 that Bell shall pay to the city 2%. And whereas it is necessary, this is still the city talking in its ordinance number 1935, to make a proper apportionment of said taxes being the ordinance 1933 payments pursuant to the settlement, referenced in 1935. Therefore, and they talk about the gross receipts taxes in section 1, be and hereby are accepted, and the commissioner of accounts is directed and ordered to make that apportionment.
1933 does not refer to payment of taxes.
1933, I think Your Honor is right. There's certainly a lot of talk in there about taxes.
In lieu of taxes.
But yes, the specific operative provision of 1933 is that it is in lieu of taxes.
But it's a fee or a charge.
It is a fee or a charge.
Are there three things here? The charge for the use of the city's property, a ad valorem tax by the city on that use interest, call it an easement, and the school district's ad valorem tax on that use interest.
There's at least those three things involved. 1933 mentions all form of charges and taxes. Ordinance 1935.
So what did 1933 pay for? All three of them.
All. In lieu of all of those.
That's Southwestern Bell's position as well.
Certainly.
If it did pay for all of them, in lieu of other taxes, why isn't that an equal and uniform problem?
Under the Constitution of 1876, first of all, those underlying taxes were disputed. It's in lieu of any allegation we could make that there were such taxes to be paid. Southwestern Bell disputed bitterly at the time and to this very day, as referenced by footnote 1 of its brief, that there was any such tax that it ever owed. So we're really settling a tax dispute as this settlement agreement. It is in lieu of taxes. They will never say that they owed those taxes. Southwestern Bell will never say they owed those taxes.
Your argument is that these are taxes in lieu of taxes.
No, my argument is that these are payments in lieu of taxes.
All right.
These are settlement payments in
payments
lieu of taxes.
Payments for the ad valorem tax assessment would be an assessment
in
lieu of that assessment.
In lieu of that assessment, in the place of any assessment you think you could make without it, I'm speaking from Southwestern Bell's point of view, but it's their opinion, and it was the dispute at the time in 1936. It's in lieu of taxes, including the dispute we have that we don't owe them at all. The Allen Gamble letter, Your Honor, that was sent back in 1936 makes that very point. Leading up to the settlement agreement, he's the representative of Southwestern Bell and says, it seems we need to settle this whole thing, and the way to do it is to agree to this instead of that.
The old City of Austin case says if you forgive somebody their taxes for some kind of settlement like that, in that case it was lower rate for oil and for gas, you've got a problem with Article 8, Section 1B, 1A.
Can I dispute Your Honor's statement?
Yes.
The old City of Austin case, Justice Heck, does not say anything about a settlement, and it was not a settlement. What happened was there was a bill reduction, and they said, because you get a bill reduction, we don't have to, would you, exempt us, was the word, exempt us from the payment of those taxes. That was under the 1870 Constitution. And as the notes to Section 55 of the 1876 Constitution, which is our Constitution today, say, this forgiveness of taxes, exemption from taxes, was a real problem. So the provision 55 of the 1876 Constitution was adopted, and as this court held, not this exact court, just a few decades ago in the Fertitta case, if there is consideration given for a commutation of a dispute, including taxes. Section 55 included taxes, although it doesn't mention it on its face. It's clear from the notes that Section 55 came about because of forgiveness of taxes. In the law, consistently since the adoption of Section 55 in 1876 Constitution, is that if there is consideration given...
Does it matter how big?
Well, I'm not sure.
I don't think... $10 because they really did want to exempt Bell from paying any taxes.
I don't think it matters under that law. Now, the case in Fertitta talks about consideration in terms of an uncertainty, and that's what we have here. There was an uncertainty. There was no certainty in the future when this in lieu of ordinance was entered, whether what Bell was going to pay as a gross receipts tax, I'm going to use that word because it's used here in Ordinance 1935, what Bell was going to pay under the gross receipts ordinance was greater, or was it going to be less than what they would pay if they were found to owe an ad valorem tax on that easement?
But assuming the payment has to be something like what the taxes would be to pass muster under Article 8, Section 1A, is that a fact question here, or can we tell that from this record?
I'm going to make that assumption, which I think I just disputed. Under your assumption, Your Honor, that is a fact question here. The evidence from Mr. Gamble's letter is that this was some attempt to be some kind of reasonable approximation, that if indeed the gross receipts went up, then the easement was more valuable. And if indeed we, Southwestern Bell, weren't making any money out there, then what's the worth of that easement? And our gross receipts will go down and your payments will go down as taxes would have otherwise.
Is it your position also that the settlement could comprehend the valuation on the basis of value requirement of Section 1B of Article 8? In other words, ordinarily, property has to be assessed at its value.
Yes.
Can that controversy be settled as you claim it was in 1933?
Yes, it can. I mean, I think it's important. It was important then, and it's important now to be able for a taxing entity such as the City of Fort Worth to be able to settle a tax dispute. And so, yes, I think any kind of disputed tax, which this certainly was, can be settled. I think we mentioned in our brief that there are many policies that favor our position here, presumptions in the law, and one of them is a strong presumption in favor of settlements. This was a settlement, and it enjoys a strong presumption, and I think it should encompass what the court is saying there.
Why didn't the change to the appraisal district process in 1982 end the agreement as a practical matter?
Because the agreement was terminable at will, and nobody exercised their will to terminate it then. If indeed, which we do not concede, the 1982 change from being the city of Fort Worth as the tax assessor collector to the appraisal district being the tax assessor collector constituted some reason for one of them to say all bets are off, they could have said it then. But they didn't.
Do I take from what you just said that after you're not making claims for anything after 92? You agree that once the 1933 was repealed, that all bets are off?
Not exactly. I think for the purposes of everything we've said so far, the answer to Your Honor's question would be yes. There is another claim in the case under the letter from the city manager at the time, David Ivory, that we are making a claim that the city, not Bell, but the city bound itself to do something after 1992.
Do you agree that on the state of this record, Ordinance 1935 was effectively repealed in 92 as well?
I don't. It may not matter, but I think if 1935 was not repealed, Ordinance 11163 does not reference Ordinance 1935, and I don't think it's fair to say it was repealed by implication. Indeed, had the city gone through with what David Ivory committed to in his letter, I think the parties would have used Ordinance 1935 as the vehicle to take care of the school district.
Do you agree that the city had the authority to repeal the older ordinances?
Yes, the city had the authority to repeal the ordinance.
So what are you asking for? Are you asking that this new ordinance be amended, or what are you asking? What is the school district asking for?
On the going forward basis, we're not asking them to amend. I mean, it'd be lovely if they did, and whether they were going to do that or not may be an issue for settlement, but. On our claims here, we're asking for damages based on failure to live up to the letter agreement.
Can the school district levy taxes?
Yes, the school district still has the power to levy taxes, but the Tarrant County Appraisal District does that now instead of it does the assessing and collecting.
So if this agreement is, if the court determines that there is no agreement here and not, then Fort Worth, the school district could go out and tax. I mean, there's nothing that stops you from taxing Southwestern Bell on the property that you insist is taxable.
That's true, except Southwestern Bell's insistence that they can't do it, and we'd be in a whole other lawsuit on that.
Which was the one that happened in 1936, and you'd ultimately have to finish that one.
That's right. We'd have to tear up the settlement agreement, which we respectfully submit should not be done, and you start a new lawsuit and maybe settle that one day.
Do you know, is Southwestern Bell taking the position that all of its payments it's making under this new ordinance satisfied its obligations under the previous two ordinances, i.e. to the school district and to the city?
I don't believe they're taking that position. Vis-a-vis Southwestern Bell and the city, they will certainly take that position because Ordinance 11163, the new ordinance, contains a release on behalf of the city. We, the school district, do not get any such release.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from the sponsor.
May it please the court, the city of Fort Worth will be represented by Mr. D. Kelly, Jr. Southwestern Bell will be represented by Mr. Bob Davis. Mr. Kelly will open with the first 3 minutes.
We will. I'll try to live to that. May it please the court, this case, as I think the court has rightly noted, is about the manner in which the school district assesses ad valorem taxes against Southwestern Bell. It was in 1936, it is today. The thing the court must understand, the city never owed the school district any money. It only stepped in to this role as a result of
why didn't pay it money?
The money was paid in 1936. The city was the assessor collector for the school district. There's no dispute on that.
Well, you mean the city didn't have any individual obligation to it?
The city had no obligation. That suit, you go back and look. And by the way, in response to Justice O'Neill, the record is made up of five documents. That is the summary judgment record as far as the contract they claimed the city entered into in 1936. And in fact, if I went back to the brief that filed this court and you go to page 10, that's exactly what they said. So all the inferences they ask you to make have to come from those documents. And the city's problem all along is there was no consideration for any obligation on the city's part to take on a responsibility to the school district to pay ad valorem taxes. That was Southwestern Bell's deal. The city had to act as assessor collector in 1936 by statute. In 1945, the city and the school district were emancipated. At that point, the school district had the right to appoint any assessor collector it wanted. Now, I'd ask you to go to the record and see if they have put any summary judgment evidence in the record that the school district appointed the city as assessor collector in 1945, and I think you'll find the evidence is not there.
But if you could, up to 1945, I'm sorry, after 1945, was the school district still receiving monies from payments
well,
paid by Southwestern Bell?
That's the point. The city paid under ordinance 1993 until it was terminated, 1995 until it was terminated, the monies that it was being paid from the Southwestern Bell to the school district. It apportioned properly. There's no claim that it did not pay the amount due under that ordinance. It was
paid. Money that belonged to the school district.
That position's irrelevant. It was paid. Whether or not we take the position now, it was illegal. And I think it clearly was illegal according to the state constitution at the time it was made. The problem is we made it. We haven't gone back in the case. In the state court case, we didn't seek a claim against the school district to pay us back for those monies. I think arguably we could. I don't think that's a very popular position to seek money from the school district. So we didn't do that, obviously, but
well,
I don't think it was their money.
Ingenuous to argue. We did this for 55 years. We took people's money. We gave it to somebody we shouldn't have, and now we want it back.
Just a second, I agree with you. I think that seems a tough position to take. The problem is I think the only way I can make sense of it is that this is a city. It's a bureaucracy. It changes over time. And this payment got ingrained in the system, and no one ever checked on it until 1992 when the city was renegotiating with Bell. Then I said, whoops, why are we paying this money? The point of the matter is the city was not getting a portion of the money it should have been getting for all these years.
There's three pieces, right? The charge for the use, tax on the use by the city, and the tax on the use by the school district.
That's in 1933. The city has a number of ways it can assess Southwestern Bell. The school district has one, and it still has it today.
What did 1933 pay? All of those, or?
At least all of those. I think Mr. Ockham's correct on that. It cites it in the statute and the ordinance, a number of things it pays for. But the police power, the regulation power, the franchise fees, and the ad valorem taxes that were due to the school district.
Well, to be clear, you're saying that under 1933, Southwestern Bell paid the city ad valorem taxes owed the school district.
I don't think there's any other way that you can look at that document and say that there's not some payment being paid. That's what the payment is being made to school district for. And that clearly is what was said
so
in those ordinances.
All three parties take the same view of 1933, that all three, Southwestern Bell was paying for its use of the property and taxes to both entities on the value they
used. No, I disagree with that point. I'm talking about 1935. 1933, those monies all come to the city. And that's what Justice Holman in the Court of Appeals opinion found was the problem with the illegality. That all those monies are paid as public monies to the city.
Well, what are they paid for is my question.
Well, the point is, Your Honor, we have to look at the documents, the source documents.
And I'm asking you, what was paid under 1933?
Well, all it talks about is fee to the city. It doesn't speak anything about the school district's right to assess that form taxes.
So your view is the taxes were not paid under 1933?
Well, under that document, no. I think the city was paying them under 1935 because they believed they had to pay those as an ad valorem tax. I believe that's what 1935 does. To read those together like they have, and again, that goes back to the inference. You can make these inferences, but you have to make an implied agreement, a three-way agreement, to do all these things.
Does 1935 refer to 1933?
No.
1933 doesn't refer to 1935?
No, it does not. The only two documents the city signed, and again, that's why I'm stressing, the city's caught in the middle of this thing. The only two documents the city signed...
Only because it wants to be.
Well, it would love to get out of this situation, I promise. It was 1933 and 1935, separate ordinances. For the longest time in the trial court, we thought there was a settlement agreement out there somewhere that we could read and see what the three parties agreed to. That's the way their pleading was drafted. They drafted their state court pleadings as breach of ordinance. We thought there was some settlement agreement out there. There wasn't. They have now, and all along, as you can see in the Court of Appeals opinion, he believed they were citing Ordinance 1935 as the contract. Well, they modified that argument somewhat. We cite that in our brief. It's the five documents that they now make up the contract, the settlement agreement. I don't think
were they in fact not executed to settle the earlier lawsuit?
Well, I think that's the inference you have to make, Your Honor. And I think you can make that inference from those documents, because they do speak as to settlement in the preamble of those orders.
And if we do, then what?
Those documents were a settlement of the
I think there was a settlement. I don't dispute there was a settlement in 1936. There's no doubt. There are settlement language in those ordinances. The problem I have is when you apply this contractual agreement, what you do is you imply various terms into it, consideration between the school district and the city, and then by implication, you end up waiving sovereign immunity by implication. I don't think that's what this court has ever said it should do. And I go back to Fidelity Sign, where it said the waiver of sovereign immunity must be by clear and unambiguous
language.
Well,
you agree there was a settlement, and you agree that these five pieces of information, these two ordinances and the resolution, evidence the settlement, or there could be a question as to whether they would evidence the settlement.
I think, again, Your Honor, they stated in the preamble, it says there was a settlement of a controversy.
Right.
In some of these
but I thought was your opposing counsel correct in saying that there are opinions or letters from city attorneys confirming that these documents all constitute the settlement of a litigation?
Well, those are letters of city attorney in 1982. They're nothing at the time. There's no record evidence from 1936 saying there was a settlement of the controversy. But I don't want to be disingenuous like Justice Heck said and say there wasn't some settlement. Clearly, there was some settlement at that time. I'm just saying the result of that settlement is not what they say, a contractual obligation on the part of the city to pay funds to the school district in perpetuity.
Let me ask you a question, though. You were the agent for the school district in collecting taxes.
For a short period of time, which is not in controversy.
But they had the option of picking another agent after that.
Yes, it is.
And they haven't. But while the city was the agent for collecting taxes, the city, the school district, and Southwestern Bell entered into an agreement on how to handle those tax payments.
Darn, again, I think you have to infer those terms. And again, that is an inference I think everyone's asked you to make.
You don't have to infer the terms. What you say is you can't infer that there was an agreement, but the terms are all spelled out. You've got an ordinance 1933 that says you're going to, in lieu of taxes, you're going to collect this fee. You've got a 1935 that says you're going to share a proportionate amount to the school district of what that's going to be, and this was all in conjunction with the settlement. And your argument is that there was no consideration of the city, but the city was the agent. So the agent was the collecting agent for the school district at the time. So all the terms are there, are they not?
Well, that's the point of saying in 1945 they were emancipated. If you take that position and you infer down to that agreement.
But the agreement's already finished. I mean, the fact that some event occurs later on affecting some responsibility of the various parties, they've already agreed that they'll comply with this.
Well, they haven't agreed to the school district. They've agreed under an ordinance, which is an ordinance is a unilateral document. It said that we will apportion these funds. It doesn't say that we have to do this forever or we'll do it. And we did it until 1992 when we repealed it.
But that's
determined
what will, though. I mean,
we did it. But there's no dispute that we have an ordinance and that we fulfilled it until 1992 when we terminated it.
But you acted, notwithstanding the 1945 emancipation, as you call it, the city did, in fact, act as a school district agent until 1992.
My point is there's no summary judgment evidence of that point. It's not clear in the record whether we did or didn't. It is clear in 1982 when TAB was created by statute that they became the collection agent for the school district. So there's a period between 45 and 92. There's no evidence of who is the assessor collector for the school district. And I will say they cite one piece of evidence in the brief, and it's some testimony from the city attorney, Wade Atkins, who was the city attorney as of 1982, who testified in the case. But if you go back and look at his testimony, he wasn't designated as corporate representative. His testimony is, I believe, inadmissible because it's speculation. He says, I don't know. And he launches into a guess that they were. He wasn't sure. They didn't seek any source documents showing that the city was appointed as the assessor collector. So we don't know for that period of time. And clearly, when we repealed the ordinance in 1992, there's no further obligation on the part of the city to continue these payments. I frankly think they waived that point for appeal. And I see my light blinking. I've given you an outline as an exhibit of the city's grounds for summary judgment. I think there's a number of grounds we've moved on. There are independent things I've discussed today. But I don't think there's any question that we terminated in 1992. We paid until 1992. Right or wrong, we believe wrongly. We believe it was improper under the state constitution to make those payments, but we did it to Justice Davis, and we continue to do it, and we terminated the responsibility.
So I'll be clear. That's because your view is that the payments that Southwestern Bell made to the city under the 1933 ordinance number 1933 were solely for the use of the city's property and not for taxes. They're not.
Again, I have to look at the summary judgment evidence. I think, again, we're inferring things. We look at the summary judgment evidence, which is the ordinance, and they state what it's for. That's all I can look at, and that's what it says. I think their position is, I mean, they were ad valorem taxes, and that's what this whole dispute, I believe, is about.
I'm just trying to get your position. I know what theirs is. It's for all three. And Southwestern Bell says it's for all three. What is the city's position?
Well, the city's position is we have to go to summary judgment evidence, which says they're for franchise fees, regulatory powers of the city.
So it's just for
fees paid to the city.
It's just for the use of the property.
Right. But there is a whole other dispute, which we don't really have a fight in as far as evaluation and those issues on a constitutional basis. Mr. Davis, I'm sure, will address these for you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Mr. Davis, can I ask you a question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Once Southwestern Bell makes these payments under this 1992 ordinance, is it your position you've satisfied your obligations to the school district?
Absolutely. That is correct, Your Honor. We believe that these payments made through the city to the school district are indeed ad valorem taxes and have always been ad valorem taxes and must be ad valorem taxes because the only claim that was brought into the litigation in 1936 by the Fort Worth Independent School District was a claim for ad valorem taxes. Therefore, we think it's inescapable. That is the substance of the payment, and that is the reason we are so firm in our conviction that it is an unconstitutional arrangement because the parties have violated Article 8, Section 1 of the Texas Constitution in making that arrangement. If I may...
But Bell proposed it.
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor. We accept full responsibility for our role in that connection. And I intend to address that because...
Is this all the responsibility to some of the blame?
Well, I'm not sure where the blame or responsibility goes in the broad sense, but certainly Southwestern Bell initiated this unconstitutional arrangement. The parties all knew, and this may be a very important point for me to stress, Your Honors, all of the parties knew this was an unconstitutional arrangement in 1933. We know that to be true by looking at the language of the Court of Appeals that decided the underlying legal question. And the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit said the following things, if I can find the language that I think will help the court. And this is remarkable, but the court was so explicit. It said, the parties should value these easement rights, quote, only as property without special reference to the money that is made in the business of the company, close quote, and, quote, not on any strained or artificial basis, close quote.
But can't you settle the dispute? Could have gone back in 1936 and taxed it on some kind of market value to ever figure out what it was.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why can't you settle it based on gross receipts or some other kind of formula?
Well, the reason you can't settle it, in our view, is because the Constitution of the state of Texas prohibits it. It says specifically that the ad valorem taxes must be equal, must be uniform, and must be based upon the fair market value of the underlying property. This income tax arrangement, which is 2% of the gross receipts derived from Southwestern Bell for the rendition of telephone service within the city limits, is in the nature of an income tax having no awareness or sensitivity to the fair market value of the underlying property. There is no concern for that constitutionally required element.
Well, is that because you can't determine what the fair market value is
to
assess the tax?
I think certainly it is possible to ascertain the fair market value of these easement rights. And indeed today, Southwestern Bell does determine the fair market value of those easement rights and pays to every school district in the state of Texas where it is present the appropriate ad valorem tax based upon that fair market value, including, and I would emphasize this, the Fort Worth Independent School District. Annually, for decades, Southwestern Bell, independently of this contract, has been preparing and filing an annual tax report to each school district, including Fort Worth Independent School District.
And are also paying funds along with the report? Or
absolutely correct. Report? And it includes the fair market value of those easement rights, and indeed the tax appraiser for Fort Worth, the Fort Worth Tarrant County Appraisal District, so determined. There's an interesting point here that I think you'll find it very important. It is to me. The president of the school board doubted Southwestern Bell's assertion that these taxes were already being paid independently of this old contractual arrangement. So he wrote a letter to the director of the Tarrant County Appraisal District in 1993 requesting his judgment about that issue. And a formal letter reply was sent by that executive director of the appraisal district. And here is what he said, quote, "Based on the information available at this time, I believe the current valuation methods used represent all of the utility value. This would include any benefit from the right to operate in, over, or under public rights of way or easements," close quote.
Well, why would Southwestern Bell pay double taxes for
that? That is precisely the point, Your Honor. The plaintiff in this case, the petitioner here, is seeking to double dip. It collects this tax.
Well, but under your position, you paid it for years.
Absolutely.
Well, why would you do that?
Well, Your Honor, frankly, because of the system used in making the determination of value. There is a unit or unitary method of valuation used that takes into account all of the property of the district, indeed in all of the districts, and a return is filed which incorporates all values, including rights-of-way values, throughout the state. Southwestern Bell adopted a uniform statewide method. It treats Fort Worth Independent School District just like it does the Dallas Independent School District and every other school district.
Incidentally, in the other localities,
yes, sir.
Do you also pay for the use of the city's property besides taxes?
Well, yes,
or
we
franchise use.
We do pay in fact, this is one of the novel things about this case. There is, to my knowledge, no arrangement anywhere in the state of Texas, and Southwestern Bell serves about 560 cities. There is no arrangement anywhere in the state of Texas, aside from this one involving Fort Worth Independent School District, where the city shares its revenues with the school district. This is unique, one of a kind, and that probably explains why the city finally decided to correct this problem. The point I'm making is these taxes are already paid once. Indeed, they have been paid for decades twice.
If they are ad valorem taxes, as you argue.
Yes, Your Honor, they are clearly ad valorem taxes.
If they are ad valorem taxes and there was an agreement to apportion them between the city and Fort Worth, why isn't the portion that the city has been paying for the independent school district ad valorem taxes?
My view is, Your Honor, that the payment by the city to the school district must be of ad valorem taxes because the school district has no claim to street rentals or reimbursement of fees permit fees or anything else. The city has those claims. The school district has no claim except for ad valorem taxes.
How do you square that position with the express language of Ordinance 1933?
Excuse me, Your Honor.
The Ordinance 1933 does not talk in terms of ad valorem taxes.
That is correct, Your Honor.
It says it's a charge, not a tax. How do you square your position with the language of the ordinance?
Well, you have to look, in my view, at the underlying substance of what occurred, and we know what issues were pending in the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit because the opinion articulates what that was. We see the letter from Southwestern Bell proposing a resolution of that dispute. The attorney, I think, Mr. Gamble, wrote a letter saying they wanted to resolve that dispute. And following that, we see the emanation of these ordinance arrangements. We think it is unmistakable that these are in substance ad valorem taxes and that the Texas Constitution forecloses this income tax substitution for an ad valorem tax which complies with Article 8, Section 1.
Mr. Davis, I'm unclear. When the city changed its ordinance, I guess in 1992 or thereabouts, did it lower the franchise fees Southwestern Bell?
No, Your Honor, it did not.
And so regardless of the outcome of this case, it produces no financial difference to Southwestern Bell?
No, Your Honor. In fact, The reality is Southwestern Bell collects all of these fees, that is the municipal fee, from subscribers. It is only the ad valorem tax that it actually pays. And in this case, Southwestern Bell has voluntarily paid the ad valorem tax twice for decades.
So the whether there's a double dipping here or not is of no concern to Southwestern Bell.
Well, except I think it reflects on the inequity of the claim of Fort Worth Independent School District. The suggestion was left hanging in the air that somehow these contentious people at Southwestern Bell weren't paying the taxes they owed, and hence we can't buy school books for children. What I'm trying to say is Southwestern Bell not only has paid its ad valorem tax, it paid it twice for decades.
I don't understand why Southwestern Bell is going to continue to pay at the same level if you've been overpaying your taxes. If I were a shareholder, I'm not sure I would be happy with that decision.
Well, what Southwestern Bell does for the Fort Worth Independent School District today and last year and the year before that is it prepares an annual rendition of its property, it applies the appropriate tax rate, it pays the tax for the Fort Worth Independent School District as it does every other school district entirely apart from this old contract, which we believe to be unconstitutional. So we fully comply with Texas law as we understand it today. It is only this contentious effort to collect it twice that brings us here to dispute the appropriateness of that second payment.
What are the payments for under Ordinance 11163? Those for taxes and the use?
Our view is that the city has a right to be reimbursed for the cost of administering Southwestern Bell's presence in the streets, alleys, and rights of way of that city. Obviously, they have to oversee the fact that we're in the streets, we're making cuts in the streets, we're patching those streets properly, to supervise Southwestern Bell's presence in the city streets, alleys, and rights of way. That's what that money is for, in our view.
Not for taxes.
No, Your Honor, it is not for taxes.
So the city could tax. You have a dispute about whether the city could tax you, but if they say that this is a real interest, this whatever you call it, easement or franchise,
yes,
or usage.
Yes, real property right.
If that's a real property right, the city can tax it.
That's their view, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah. In which event, the money that you're paying under 11163 would not satisfy that obligation. That's your view.
Well, I think it's correct to say that the payments we make under 11163 are in satisfaction of all of the various claims of the city. Not the school district, of course,
right,
but the city. And that embraces ad valorem taxes and permit fees and a variety of other kinds of fees.
But if it does, how is it any different from Ordinance 1933?
Well, I guess the difference, Your Honor, is it does not include any intended payment of ad valorem tax liability to Fort Worth Independent School District.
Right, but if it does include taxes to the city.
Yes, Your Honor.
And your argument earlier was you can't base that on gross receipts. And this ordinance just says $5.3 million or something. It just has a dollar. But why doesn't Ordinance 11163 share the same constitutional problems as 1933?
It might be argued that it does. We would respectfully suggest that it does not, because the amount only, in our view, matches the responsibility Southwestern Bell has to satisfy the expenses, to reimburse the city for the expense of administering our presence in the streets, alleys, and rights of way. And this has not been clear because there's not been a single document throughout this period of time. And indeed, the arrangement today is not the same that existed in 1993. There are different contractual arrangements Southwestern Bell has had with the city of Fort Worth, and I apologize. This hasn't been as lucid as I would like it to be.
Well, I'm confused again. You were saying a while ago that you have paid ad valorem taxes to Fort Worth Independent School District, and it's been double dipping.
Yes.
Now, the ad valorem taxes that you have paid to the school district, do they include a value for the easements on city property or not?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. In fact, that was the recital I was reading from the letter of the director of the Tarrant County Appraisal District. It was his determination.
I thought you took the position that these were not taxable items.
Well, Your Honor, we would like to hold that view. The regrettable reality is we lost a unanimous decision in the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit We did not take any further effort to file a petition at the Supreme Court of the United States. It's kind of hard to say that that unanimous decision is to be ignored. Of course, we are complying with that decision of law every year when we file our ad valorem tax reports with the various school districts throughout the state of Texas. So we respect that decision, even though we might urge in the future that it was erroneous. But the realities are there. The court has made a decision. We have to respect those decisions and do in our daily function in Southwest Bell.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you all.
Mr. Oxford, you have made the comment that the city, that the Court of Appeals was incorrect in its footnote that the Fort Worth Independent School District was apparently receiving some ad valorem tax from Southwest Bell. Is that what this dispute, is that what you were commenting about?
Yes, and it,
so
I, what we're saying there, Your Honor, is that there's no, what Mr. Davis just recited, there's only incompetent summary judgment evidence of this hearsay letter that he put in. There's other summary judgment evidence that Bell is not paying ad valorem taxes. But
it seems to me the school district would know that. I mean, either the school district could say, we didn't deposit that check in our bank account.
We know about that, Your Honor. The issue is a very complex issue of what that check represents. Does it represent a payment on the easement that we're talking about or not? But coming back to Justice Owen's point, it's irrelevant here. What happened back in 19, whether they're paying those ad valorem taxes or not, what happened back in 1936 was that what we contended and they contested was a responsibility to pay ad valorem taxes on that easement was replaced by a contract. It was settled.
Just so I'm clear, would you tell me just in a sentence or two, what are your categories of claims pre-92? What are you claiming? What is it you want?
Let me answer that question because I don't agree with the statements that were made by each one. We are suing Southwestern Bell for underpayments of under Ordinance 1933. We are suing the city because starting in 1966, they got secret payments, and they're described in their own memo in the record, page 585 of the record. They got secret payments under Ordinance 1933 that they did not share with us under Ordinance 1935. So we have different claims against each one of them for pre-1992. But just so I want to come back to your point, what happened in 1936 was this tax obligation was replaced with a contractual obligation. Bell that was not paying ad valorem taxes, they were paying in lieu of ad valorem taxes to them, to the city, and to us. Now, if somewhere down the line, which we contest, but if somewhere down the line, Justice Enoch, they all of a sudden started writing a check that magically started covering this easement, they should have known it. And at that point, they have every right under a contract terminable at will to say, wait a minute, all bets are off. Circumstances have changed, and we're going to terminate our contractual obligation to pay you because the underlying principles of that contract have changed. And they have every right to do that, and they did not do that. And the reason they didn't do that is because they were receiving substantial benefits under the three-sided contract. They were receiving the right to operate and make millions and millions of dollars from the citizens of Fort Worth by providing telephone service and avoid disputes with us and with the city. Neither did the city of Fort Worth choose to terminate, even though, as Mr. Kelly says, there was some change in tax collection agent. That doesn't matter. That's the underlying issue. If they said, wait a minute, all bets are off, we don't have a responsibility to do this anymore under the law, they could have terminated the arrangement, which was terminable at will. But they didn't choose to do so. Why? Because the Southwestern Bell said the city got $63 million under this arrangement. They weren't about to terminate this arrangement. They were all receiving the benefits they wanted under a contract that was terminable at will. And that comes back to your question. When it was terminated at will, do we have claims to them? Yes, we absolutely do. That's what this lawsuit's about, and I described.
So let me make sure I'm clear about this. After 1982, when the assessment, the board or the whatever, started assessing taxes, what do you call payments under 1933? Were they a tax? Were they a charge?
The same as I always call them, Your Honor, and that is a contractual obligation that was substituted in lieu of a tax, in lieu of ad valorem taxes, in lieu of the supervisory responsibility, in lieu of all manner of taxes and charges. That's the only charge they had to pay for the use of that easement.
But once they started paying the taxes separately, then what do you have?
I have a contractual right for them to do exactly what they've already been doing. They were not paying me taxes. They were paying me a contractual settlement sum.
In
lieu of taxes. And if they think I was double dipping after that, they should have terminated the arrangement. But they were not paying me taxes. They were not paying me ad valorem taxes. We bitterly dispute that claim because the agreement itself said it.
Why was 1933 written solely in terms of payment to the city for use of the city's property and charges to the city, reimbursement to the city? There's no mention of the school district. Why was it structured that way?
That was this typical ordinance that they've used all over the state, but ordinance number 1935 and our resolution made clear that the school district was to share. Remember, this is a three-sided contract that has all kinds of portions to it.
Then why should we run into trouble in the Constitution because the city is sharing its general revenues with
them? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Those funds that were shared with us did not come from the levy by the city of Fort Worth on their own citizens. Those funds came from Southwestern Bell. Why? Because they had a contractual obligation to pay one of the two plaintiffs on the condition that that plaintiff shared on a specified, necessary basis, according to the contract itself, with the other plaintiff in that case. That those funds were not, and they nowhere did they say those funds were the general funds of the city of Fort Worth. Absolutely not. They were contractually ours, and they were obligated to pay them to us.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. That completes the arguments and the foregoing calls that are submitted on briefing or online.
All right. Oye, 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 the Honorable, this